shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar, joined this week by two of my compatriots on this podcast, Cody Wolf.
Joygasm.
I was enraged. I was already enraged with this movie when that came on. My rage was building over the movie. May have hit a peak at that moment. And Jack Estenberg.
There used to be a day that I was alone on the sea. You remain, but I don't let the dark side of me.
Possibly the worst Seal cover ever.
I do actually like that song.
Continuing our tour of the most hated films of my life. I mean, if Crystal Skull is one of the most hated films of my life, this is another one. This is a film. I've talked about it before on this podcast, and well, I'll probably reference some stories I've told before. I left this movie in 1995 saying I am never going to pay for a Joel Schumacher product again of any type. In fact, I don't think I have. I paid $1.99 to rent this on VOD yesterday, and I think it's the only money I've put towards Joel Schumacher in 20 years.
I remember early on when I discovered your love of film, you had told me an interesting story about Batman Forever.
I'm going to tell that story again.
I'm sure
again.
You've said, okay, I'm sure we've mentioned the podcast before.
I think we've actually told it on the podcast before, but I'm going to tell it at the end.
You need to get there.
Yeah. I don't remember if I saw this one in the theater, because I remember seeing Batman and Robin in the theater, but I'm not sure if I saw this one, but I will say that I probably loved this movie when I was a kid. I watched it over and over and over again.
Now, in fairness, how old were you guys when you first saw this movie?
So this movie came out in what, 1995?
I believe it's 95.
95, yeah. I was 14.
Yeah, I was okay. In 95, I was 8, but I might not have seen it. I probably saw it in 95, so I was probably 8 or 9. I was like the...
So you're you were the target demo. Yeah.
I loved the film when I first saw it. When I was 14 years old, and Jim Carrey was the hottest thing ever. Ooh, and Jack. We all went, oh yeah, so, you know it.
Jack's swimming.
I can't deny it. It's that green spandex. I love it. No, because the mask was huge, and in Living Color was this funny show that he was this big up and coming star, so he's huge, and now Ace Ventura and all that.
Well,
so
I will say that the Riddler really did a good job playing Jim Carrey in this movie.
Yeah, he did. Yes,
yeah.
He did.
This is Well, both of the villains. I'm going to steal one. Because one of the reviews I remember reading at the time said Tommy Lee Jones is playing Jack Nicholson, playing the Joker.
Yeah,
I mean, he's not playing an original character.
No.
And Jim Carrey is playing the Riddler, playing Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Right?
He was trying for the Frank Gorshin, but he wasn't doing it.
I don't know if he was.
I thought Frank Gorshin was rubbery movements and laughs and but he had this maniacal way about him where he almost had a split personality, whereas Jim Carrey is just basically doing the Jim Carrey stuff.
But I think that it was completely Jim Carrey, just him being him, but I thought it worked for the Riddler. I mean, it gets wacky at some point.
It goes over the top. I guess it's not a bad cast. Like in a better movie maybe he could do a good
movie. But I mean, in 1995 it was like he's the obvious choice to play the Riddler in my...
Well, I mean, it's we were saying off mic, this cast in 1995 is amazing. Val Kilmer was basically white hot at the time.
Yeah.
You have Jim Carrey, who is probably the biggest movie star on the planet in 1995. You have Tommy Lee Jones, who was a big, big name in 95.
Mm-hmm. Nicole Kidman.
Chris O'Donnell, who's huge. Nicole Kidman was big. The fact they got Drew Barrymore
to play a two-line role.
Like, this cast is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally get why this movie made a lot of money at the time, but it has not held up well.
Well, it hasn't aged well. It's very much a product of that time.
Yes, and that Joel Schumacher vision.
I feel like I'm going to be disagreeing with you guys on this podcast.
Really? Are you saying you kind of like it?
I still have a soft spot for it. Maybe because I watched it when I was a kid. I watched it so much when I was a kid. It like reminds me of being a kid. But I feel like, I mean, when you compare it to Batman and Batman Returns, it's like obviously it's
inferior.
Not the same. But if you look at it, I mean, because with this one, Batman and Robin, you can tell he's trying to do the comic book thing and the 60s show thing. But I thought you could tell more in this one. It worked more in this one because some angles and stuff kind of look more like a comic book.
Batman and Robin's weird. Well, we'll get into this too. It's also weirdly heavy at times.
Yeah,
like it's strangely like half. Yeah,
I wonder how much of that is shades of early drafts when Tim Burton was attached as a director, or was he ever attached as director?
He was attached as director and essentially left the project. But his name,
I think he's on as a producer. yeah.
They listed him as a producer. My understanding is he didn't really play a role. Like, he essentially had left it, but
they had to give him some
credit. All right, so let's get into Batman and Robin.
Yes, let's do it.
Batman Forever.
Which Batman and Robin seems like a more fitting title because this is the film about Batman and Robin.
That might be why I like this movie too more than you guys, just because I compare it to Batman and Robin in my experience watching that in theater. And I'm like, well, Batman Forever wasn't so bad.
Good point. I do think.
And this is a long one, so we're going to kind of have
this
to.
This is almost like a 2-hour movie.
This is a 2-hour movie.
Which I was surprised when I checked the runtime. I was like, wait, this is 2 hours? I don't remember this being 2 hours.
I seem to remember being like a quick, like a 100-minute action adventure.
It's like 2 hours of not a lot actually happening. Like, there's a lot of
sexual innuendo.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
There's a lot of repetitive scenes.
There is.
And then this kind of climactic showdown.
Yeah. But you don't really get a lot of meat with like the Riddler and Two-Face. Like, I remember it being more meat with those two, but
more substantial.
It really is more just like, hey, we're going to find out who Batman is.
We're both cackling bad guys who have our mission is to kill Batman and steal a lot of diamonds.
Then they find out who Batman is, and for reasons that are totally unclear, do not kill Batman.
No.
They do
trash the Batcave, though. That says something.
I guess. All right, so we'll get it. So the movie starts off with Batman gearing up.
Yeah, this is also how Batman and Robin opens up.
Yeah.
Because obviously we reviewed these films in reverse order, but this is like the, you immediately know right now that this is a complete, I didn't like the movie, but I can appreciate that Schumacher is putting his own stamp on it. He's not copycatting Tim Burton.
Well, no.
Which I think maybe somebody should have, but.
Well, he's going crazy, because I mean, this Batmobile, I'm going to make the case. This is, of all the Batman movies, this is the craziest Batmobile.
Oh, yeah,
it looks like it's designed by H.R. Giger.
I think the one in Batman Robin is worse though.
This one doesn't even look functional. This looks like an alien from Aliens movie, in car form.
Scene later on with the car chase, you can tell they're going like 30 miles an hour. I doubt that they can go very fast.
And they can only drive in a straight line. Yeah. It's the first ever straight line car chase I've ever seen in a big budget movie.
Like right now, this Batmobile looks like an electric razor with like LED lights tapped to it.
I have the toy too, I almost brought it today, but.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Oh my God!
It's in my attic. I didn't.
We also get the first appearance of bat nipples on this bat suit.
Which it's funny because Batman and Robin is much more maligned for that. Maybe because they highlighted it more.
In Batman and Robin, you get more of like the ass cheek shot and the nipple shot, like when they're putting on the outfits to show that, you know, Batman and Robin are young, attractive guys. They're sexy, so of course the suits have to show that. But at the same time, it's supposed to be bulletproof body armor, so why would it be that detailed? It's just stupid.
It's just 90s. So Batman is going out because Two-Face is breaking into a bank vault.
And he says he's going to get drive-through. And Alfred says, I get you to take a sandwich, sir.
This is the first of, Alfred's like, can I convince you to take a sandwich? He's like, I'll get drive-through. And it's the first of many '90s one-liners in this movie that you're like, I don't think there's actually a joke there. It's sort of a one-liner, but like, it's not even funny, or like, there's not even like a comedic intent to it.
Yeah. Just to say, lighten it up a bit. But you already get the sense. Okay, so Alfred is the same. So this is clearly in the same continuity as Batman, and Batman Returns.
Yes.
They mention Catwoman.
Yep.
So now you get. This is where it starts to bother me right away, is that this looks so much different. And while I can appreciate a director putting his unique stamp on a film, but this is the third in a series, and it looks nothing like we've seen before.
Well, it's a very heightened production design.
Yeah.
Budget's obviously up.
It's obviously up. They just said, take that look of Batman and Batman Returns and take it even further. To the point of ridiculousness.
The opposite, though. Like, in Batman Returns, like, the city's very gothic, and it's, you know, that art deco, and it's...
Right.
And then this one, like, everything, it's like a neon factory, just the whole city.
Well, this is like a cartoon art deco, almost. Because, like, some of the interiors, like, there are interiors that appear to be art deco exteriors, which are like, what is going on?
Yeah, because that's true, because in Two Faces Lair later on. I always thought that was outside for some reason, like in an alley, but it's inside.
It's inside.
But there's like a giant Art Deco face. Like,
it's crazy. Yeah, it's like, weird. There's no way. Like, this is also sort of like somebody said to the production design team, we're going to give you all the money you want, and no one is going to say no to anything to ever. Do it. Yeah. You know, no one's ever going to say, ah, that's too much. You know? Yeah.
Tone it down.
So Tommy Lee Jones is breaking into this, as Two-Face is breaking into this bank vault.
And he's flipping a coin to decide whether or not he's going to kill the security guard.
And I'm going to prove
the Two-Face gimmick.
Here's my biggest issue with this movie. Okay. I am a big Batman fan.
Yeah.
And a Batman comics fan. And this is why this movie filled me with rage in 1995. This movie takes two of the most interesting Batman villains and complex Batman villains and makes them just crazy cartoon characters. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Two-Face, which the movie barely even gets into.
Very deep.
By the
character.
Way, he was played by Billy Dee Williams in the first two.
Yes,
Billy
he was.
Dee Williams got the shaft on this.
Yes, yeah. We'll go into that. That did bother me even when I first saw it.
That really bothers me because clearly Billy Dee Williams played it in those two movies thinking he was going to play her, you know, Two-Face.
Yeah. And that they were going to build it up.
In the comics, Two-Face is very complex in that he's not always just a villain. He is a guy who has been unable to decide between what is wrong and right and actually relies on the coin because he can't deal with the role of chance. So Two-Face is actually, at times, in some storylines, almost a hero who helps Batman and then is a villain at other times. And it's really, they've done very, very interesting things dating back to the 70s with this character. None of which you would have any idea of here, where he is just a maniacal laughing fool who seems to enjoy having a split personality. It's crazy. And I'll go on my other rant, which is the Riddler, who is a brilliant mastermind who has a flaw in that he obsessively has to provide Batman with an opportunity to stop him. And the Riddler in the comics has a huge problem with the fact that he has to do this, but he has to do this.
It's compulsion.
It is a compulsion for him, and he loves the complexity of heists and crimes. Again, you would get no idea of this from this movie.
His arc in this movie is really just, he's just like mad that Bruce Wayne won't give him money, and so he's like, I'm gonna be evil now.
Yeah.
Well, this is the same. This is the same setup that we would see a few years later with even the same shot setups and the same color scheme when Uma Thurman becomes
Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy. It is exactly the same. A crazy lab coated green in a green lit scene. A crazy scientist with thick glasses and crazy hair goes a little nuts. Tries an experiment and then becomes a green-themed cackling villain in one scene and fixates on Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Like, that is literally the same. They literally took the Riddler scenes, the Riddler creation scenes, the origin story of Riddler in this movie, and transposed it on the Poison Ivy character in the next film. And that was one of the first things I noticed when I saw Batman and Robin. Obviously, digressing a little bit, but that was a big issue that I noticed when I saw this movie, is how similar those two, you could play those scenes, they're almost shot for shot the same.
Oh yeah.
The challenge, like she dresses up like the nerd and she challenges Bruce Wayne, and then Bruce Wayne doesn't believe my vision, you know, and it's almost the same scene.
Yeah, I hadn't seen this in 20 years. I'd seen Batman and Robin much more recently, and Batman and Robin really borrows from this format heavily. I mean, they're copycat films in many ways.
Yeah.
So Batman climbs into the bank vault to try to save a guard. It's really not totally clear why Batman actually gets into the vault.
Because the guy's tied up in there, he's going to save him.
But you would think that Batman would be like, hey, I better make sure no one's going to close this vault door on me, which he doesn't.
They tend to forget in a lot of Batman movies, that they tend to forget the detective aspect of Batman.
Or they tend to forget that he's not an idiot. Hey, is anyone going to close this door on me before I go in here?
So then there's quote-unquote boiling acid that is being shot out of random spigots inside this bank vault.
As Two-Face picks up the bank vault with a helicopter and is pulling it along, And this bank guard is... You remember the end of Batman and Robin, the two scientists who were with the telescope?
Yeah, whose
only role there is to explain to the audience that there's a threat. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And that was totally this bank guard whose just only role is to be there, be like, ah, we're going to die. Yeah. And then Batman pulls, this is one of my favorite moments in the movie, pulls this guy's hearing aid out.
Yep.
This guard is about to die of boiling acid. Yes. And he goes, hey, that's my hearing aid. Okay, we get it. I know that was exposition for the audience, right, but really? Yeah. Which Batman then uses to pick the lock. And Cody or Jack, you may need to take me through this. So Batman then pulls them out of the top of the bank vault.
Yes.
He shoots a batarang into another, like, the building, mm-hmm. like with a line.
It,
with a line
to the vault.
To a bank vault that has to weigh 4,000 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, something like
conservatively.
That.
Yes.
And using a grappling hook that just is literally like attached to a wall.
It
swings a bank vault back into.
My favorite part is just he leaves.
It's
so
inertia.
He tells the bank or the security guard to like hold the cable, and then he cuts the cable to the helicopter, and the bank vault like swings down. It's like. That guy
should be dead. Yeah,
he's not going to hold that.
Batman killed that guy. Yeah. I mean, this definitely either it hit terminal velocity or
he
died. You know, like when this swung back into a bank. This is crazy. I remember watching this.
This is so outlandish. It's a very outlandish rescue. Like they could have done this so much more simply.
This is
or they could
very
have forced Batman
60s
to choose.
TV show.
Exactly, you could very easily have had some setup where Two-Face faces Batman with. I don't know, maybe a choice, like choose Batman, which one lives, which one dies, and then Batman outthinks him, then Batman outthinks Two-Face, saves them both, arrests Two-Face, and then say Riddler busts Two-Face out because he needs his muscle or something. That would have made more sense. Of course, they just wanted to do these ridiculous over-the-wall, show off their special effects rescue scenes.
Well, and then Two-Face, Batman gets to the helicopter with Two-Face. Two-Face puts a club on the helicopter steering wheel, which is a very 1995 reference.
That was a dumb joke. Because even in 95 or 94, the club was already being criticized. Like, that was the hot item. And then everyone was stealing cars with the club on them just because they could.
This felt like a James Bond moment to me. Timely reference that was dated even at the point they used it and so perfectly, like, dated a movie.
Mm-hmm.
That you're like, ooh. And it crashes into Gotham's version of the Statue of Liberty. Right. Which is never... I kept thinking that was going to come back in some way, but no. Yeah. No need for that to come back. We just smashed the face off the Statue of Liberty. No need to ever clarify what happens with that or anything. And we then meet Edward Nygma, played by Jim Carrey.
Yes.
He works for Bruce Wayne in one of his, Bruce Wayne's in the tech division of Wayne Enterprises,
something like
that.
Yeah, there's some news report that says the electronics and technical division of Wayne Enterprises. And then he walks in the door.
Yeah.
This is where I think that... I'm not sure if a lot of people agree with me on this. I actually, now we've seen, this is our first scene where Val Kilmer plays Bruce Wayne because he's Batman before this. And I actually think that in a good movie, Val Kilmer in 95 could have been a really good Batman. Like if given a good movie, like a good script, I think Val Kilmer could have pulled it off.
Here's part of my problem, because I for years remembered Val Kilmer as being a little better in this than the movie itself was.
Oh, for
watching
me it was opposite.
It again, I was not sure. There's a very fine line between playing a part subtly and playing it lazily.
Mm-hmm.
And Val Kilmer is walking that line for a lot of this movie.
I can't remember if I said it in the Batman and Robin one, but I always felt that George Clooney made a decent... He made a better Bruce Wayne than he did a Batman.
Yes.
And with Val Kilmer, I think he made a better Batman than he did Bruce
Wayne.
You are right. I don't mind his Batman, but Bruce Wayne is very vanilla.
Yes, you are right. Kilmer actually in the Batman scenes is not bad. But his Bruce Wayne is so, it's almost a Stallone level of laziness. And I like Val Kilmer a lot.
Okay,
He's done a lot of great work, but... Yeah. I think he played this so scaled back that there's just nothing there to his Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And I know he's trying to do an emotionally closed off Bruce Wayne, but it
just comes across as
And he's also in a different movie. I don't know.
Oh, he even looks visually different. Like the scenes later on with the Dick Grayson character in the mansion, it looks like a different film.
Yeah.
Like literally the cinematography looks different. The lighting looks different. It's like it was directed by a different person, those scenes.
It doesn't even, he does not fit into the rest of this film at all. Yeah. Yeah. Even a little.
But anyway, we're in Wayne Enterprises.
He's into it, and Edward Nygma is sort of like a weird fanboy.
Yeah, he like loves it. Like Bruce Wayne is his idol because he's like this, you know,
successful
businessman. And he has this invention that he wants to pitch him, and it's this thing where he can manipulate people's brainwaves to show them like 3D TV, basically.
And Bruce Wayne's like, I'm not really cool with brainwave tampering.
Yeah,
so, and Edward Nygma freaks out, you know, and. I mean, Bruce Wayne's also like, based on this like based on this 40-second elevator pitch you've given me, I'm not really cool with the idea of brainwave tampering.
Well, he's gonna give him a shot. That's what always bothers me. Is like he's like, okay, you know, send the schematics or whatever to my assistant. We'll take a look at it but Edward Nygma's like, no, you have to tell me yes now or whatever. And he's like, well, then no.
Yeah.
So he's gonna give it a shot, but because he pushed, he said no, and then he's upset about that.
Yeah. It's a very rushed scene.
They do imply. Well, because Bruce sees the bat signal outside the window.
So
he's got to get out of there. He's never mind, now I have to go.
Now, who turned on the bat signal? Is it Commissioner this Gordon?
Time, who knows?
No. Yeah, because in the opening scene of the movie, before the assault on Two-Face and his henchmen to save the guard, the Commissioner Gordon randomly brings in Nicole Kidman, who plays Dr. Chase Meridian, who's this sexy, mysterious woman who's into
she's not that mysterious. She's pretty straightforward.
She's like there. Oh yeah, Batman, here's this woman here that you're clearly gonna have some flirtatious banter with. And then she flirts with Batman and then he goes in to save the guard. Well, now there's this elaborate sequence of events that gets Bruce Wayne into the Batcave and he gets the bat suit on and he gets to the rooftop of Gotham City.
Yeah, because he goes to his office and there's like a special a shoot there that takes him to the Batcave, I guess.
Yeah.
But so he like walks in the room, he goes, door, and the door closes, and then he sits in the chair, and he goes, chair, and the chair, and it like pops open, he like slides down. It's like, what if he just said chair, like sitting there at like a business meeting?
I thought of that too.
We need to get new chairs for the, no!
Yeah.
I
was like, where'd he go?
Yeah, you really needed a better code word than chair. Yeah.
Or maybe like a lever to push.
So he gets in the basket, and he goes up to the top of the police headquarters, and it's Dr. Chase Meridian's there.
To hit on him and to feel up his rubber bat nipples.
I feel like, this is another thing I didn't remember that well, but like on this podcast, we've seen some real feminist nightmare films, and like Nicole Kidman's character is a feminist nightmare. Her only role, she brings Batman there to like try to sex him up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Like this woman should be portrayed as like a strong professional, and instead, like it's embarrassing. Like I felt embarrassed.
Yeah, yeah. She's supposedly this like great psychiatrist or psychologist or whatever, but she never really. She says like a couple things like, oh, I can tell you have suppressed memories. And that's like all she does is like a
doctor. Other than that, it's like horrible. Like she's like almost like a James Bond girl, but with minus like a sexual innuendo name. Yeah.
Did this movie need a love story anyway? Like it just seems to be one thing. Like, I mean, this movie has a lot of problems. Seriously, it does. But from a production standpoint, one could say, well, if they cut the love story out, that could have been a lot less baggage. Well, they could have spent more time with like Robin or something.
No more time with Robin.
No,
I'd rather have more Jason Rooney than Robin.
Well, this is again in the missed opportunities. As I was watching this, I thought, you know, there's sort of an interesting idea there of a criminal psychologist who is very attracted to Batman, but is also trying to help Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And the duality of those roles. A concept that is barely explored in this movie. And in fact, when it is explored, is handled so awkwardly, it's almost like, you know what? You should have just not even done it.
Well, I think it's more interesting that she's like a, this doctor who's borderline insane herself. Like psychotic because of her just obsession with this guy. It's crazy. And I remember picking up as a kid, like, oh, she's into him. But watching now as an adult, it's like, oh, wow, they really are pushing that.
Yeah, they're really, there's no subtlety. Yeah. No. And it's also one of the best laughs in the movie is when Commissioner Gordon in pajamas comes up. He's like, who turned on the bat signal? Batman's like, don't worry, Commissioner Gordon. I guess he lives there.
What I was asking Jack. I was like, he has his bath. Did he rush down his bathrobe, or does he just?
I have expected him to have like the toothbrush still in his mouth, like. turning the signal. No, no, it's...
It's so great. He might as well have had, like, a sleeping hat on, yeah, you know?
Yeah, a stocking cap.
Yeah.
And a candlestick.
And
a lantern.
So Batman refuses her advances and takes off.
And he's like, I gotta go. He's like, this is weird. I dress up like a bat, and this lady's too weird for me.
But he decides to mac it to her in Bruce Wayne form. At least he's open to
there's
score.
A line earlier on where someone asked him, like, oh, who are you taking to that big whatever?
Because we have the suicide. So Nigma does his human testing for his 3D TV, and it fails to do what he wanted it to do, but the unexpected benefit was it makes him smarter.
Yeah.
So he decides, well, screw this. I'll kill this guy who's my boss.
Ed Begley Jr. Yeah.
Yep. And I'll use my new invention to take over the city or whatever. So he fakes a suicide. Somehow he's able to manipulate the security camera.
He fakes security footage. I guess
because it's his device, like, creates, like, you know, fantasy images.
I suppose he can use his imagination to create video. I suppose that makes sense.
It's probably the least of the problems this movie has.
But he all of a sudden, right? So he all of a sudden creates his first riddle. Like, I didn't get the sense that this guy had riddles on the brain at all. Like, except he's got, like, a little bobblehead of the Riddler character. And in his home, he's got this bizarre, like, coin-operated fortune teller game thing with the Riddler guy in it. I never got a sense that the character of Nigma was the kind of guy who likes to play puzzles. Like... But they could have done more with that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden he's like, okay, now I've got my brain control device. I guess I'm going to dress in green question marks and send riddles to Bruce Wayne. Okay. Right. Which is what he does. Which is his gimmick. Like, he just invents his gimmick overnight.
He sends a riddle to Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne decides to bring the riddle to Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne is, like, you know, looking for her expert opinion as a criminologist. Her expert opinion is, she says a lie. He says, quote, my opinion is this writer is a total wacko.
And even he's like,
okay, professional, you know, like, wait, like, what is going on here? Like,
he's a wacko.
Yeah. Her character is an embarrassment. Like, Nicole Kidman, who is a fantastic actress, I hope she made a lot of money for this movie, because this is really embarrassing stuff.
She was hired based on her looks, right?
She's sad, but that's
the way it was.
Well, and she's a good enough actress that she had to read this script and be like, oh no, this is like a disaster. I mean, but maybe she's like, well, a ton of money, I don't, you know.
Get to work with all these big stars, because again, at the time, these were all big names.
I hope it was a big payday for her, because it had to have been a lot of money for it to be worth it. She also shows him a Rorschach test. And he's like, hey, what's with the bat? She's like, oh, no, that's a Rorschach test. You see what you want.
And then they cut to a shot of it.
You look at it. It's
a bat.
It's clearly a bat. It's
basically a picture of a bat.
It's literally a picture of a bat. You couldn't see anything other than a bat in this test. So I think that's when he then asks her to go to the circus with him.
In the creepiest way ever, too. He goes, I really got to get you out of those clothes. And she's like, what? And he's like, and into a black dress. And I was like, that's still super creepy.
Yeah.
That I should try that sometime. No.
And we go to the most production-designed circus ever.
Oh, my God, yeah.
This was crazy. I mean, to the point where I think even if people were at this circus, they would have been like, whoa, what is going on with the production design here? I mean, I don't even know how to describe it.
It's, like, huge. It's, like guys, like, spray-painted gold, like, playing drums on top of statues that are, like, 40 feet tall.
And the audience couldn't even have seen those guys. That was only for the camera.
There was, like, oh, God. And the Flying Graysons appeared to have, like, 2 feet of room to work, though, at the same time, despite this massive big top.
I did, like, this is one... This is the one thing this movie did that I liked was it was sort of a cute nod that the Flying Graysons were wearing what were essentially variations on the original Robin costume.
Yeah, that was.
It was sort of a fun nod to that while also making you aware, like, you're probably not going to see this all movie long because this costume's kind of crazy. But I was like, oh, okay. And did we mention, by the way, this circus is live on TV?
On GNN.
Can you imagine what world is a circus performance carried live on TV?
No,
one of the cameras appears to be on the floor of the circus.
Yeah. I love talking about things that are live on TV. Earlier in the movie, we get a news report that shows how Harvey Dent became Two-Face. Yeah. And there's like editing, like involved, like it cuts to a shot of, well, like, my, instead my of just like a that. Camera in the courtroom, like panning over.
Yeah. My favorite part is that, like, isn't Batman there? He's like
doing testimony in
his Batman suit. Yeah. sitting.
Which I think actually, in the 50s or 60s when they first did this, I think that actually is a thing that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sort of in the earlier days.
In the comic books, it probably works better.
In the early,
in that time period.
In that time period. I think if they did this in the 70s or 80s, they would not have had Batman in his suit testifying at a trial. But in the 50s and 60s, it was a little different. So
we're on the circus, is on TV, so that Edward Nygma can watch it and be inspired when Two-Face comes in and holds the place hostage.
Two-Face comes in, and I've seen the film twice. I'm still a little unclear.
Is he there to find out who Batman is? How does he know that Batman's alter ego is at the circus?
I don't know. I'm a little unclear on what Two-Face's motives are.
But doesn't he ask the crowd, Batman, reveal yourself or I'll kill these people?
He says, I have this big bomb. I'm going to blow it up unless someone here tells me who Batman is. And he said, chances are someone here knows who Batman is. Chances are someone here is Batman. Tell me
but
who
how does
it
he
is.
Know that? Batman could be just some guy living in a sewer somewhere. He doesn't know. We know as the audience, but he doesn't know.
But what is Two-Face's master plan? Is it just like, I don't like Batman, I want to kill Batman? Like, is there anything beyond that?
Obviously, this is severely downplayed, but obviously he blames Batman for the scarring of his face. So of course he wants to take Batman out so he can continue his criminal endeavors. But again, this is not any more than just, I'm a gangster, see? I'm going to take over this town. I want Batman dead. Like, he's very not deep, like you mentioned before.
Okay, this complex that's all character. It was, is he's just like, I want to kill Batman.
He wants to kill Batman, and that's it. So he can continue his reign of terror.
So he starts the timer on this giant bomb, and everyone starts freaking out, and Bruce Wayne tries
to
yell.
Which is the most bomby bomb that you've ever seen. I mean,
literally. It's like they took it out of a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yeah, it's just like Acme on it. Yeah.
And Bruce Wayne, like, stands up and tries to yell, like, I'm Batman, but no one can hear him.
Because he's drowned out in the crowd.
Well, and then no one paid attention to that. Bruce Wayne begins karateing guys in the middle of the circus floor. Thousands of people
on live TV.
They might think TV are probably watching this Batman.
Someone should be like, "Whoa, Bruce Wayne is like a karate master," and no one is like, "Well, that's weird," you know.
And this is, of course, the Graysons are like, "Well, we're gonna try to get this bomb out while I guess we can." I don't know what.
So, in one of the worst edited sequences in modern film history, the Graysons take the bomb out through the roof of the circus. I only know this because of the final shots in the sequence where a bomb comes through a roof. All of the shots prior to that were so confusing.
The hole in the roof comes out to a manhole in the street, doesn't it?
Well, I think I thought that at first. This is really poorly edited.
Because wouldn't it be a tent? Isn't a big top generally made of cloth?
I think it's a stadium. Like a stadium.
So it's kind of like a convention center.
Is, amazingly, this stadium has a hole in the top. And the bomb then rolls down the stadium roof and launches into the ocean.
I thought it was like the middle of the street.
It looks a lot like
this is an underground circus.
It didn't look. This was so terribly shot. It was no coordination between the shooting, the storyboarding, shooting, and editing of this. All failed.
Yeah. Yes.
So as Dick Grayson is bringing the bomb out of the top of the dome or whatever, his family all falls to their deaths.
And then they do this dramatic zoom in on Val Kilmer as if he's supposed to be like emotionally torn by this, but he looks like he's looking at the wall.
Yeah.
Like there's no like pain on his face.
No.
Like it's just literally like
he looks like he's watching like an episode of Grey's Anatomy. Yeah.
And also you're supposed to feel like this, you know, sadness that Dick Grayson's parents are dead or whatever. They literally don't have names in this movie. In the credits, they're Mom Grayson and Dad Grayson.
I saw that.
I'm like, how are you supposed to feel like any sorrow for these people if you don't
have them?
And Dick Grayson himself doesn't seem to be that cut up about it. He's just more pissed.
Ever get that shot.
Like, I'm going to go kill Two-Face, like in the next scene. Like literally in the next scene, he motorcycles up to the Wayne Mansion.
And Commissioner Gordon.
Commissioner Gordon says, "Look, we need to help this kid, and we know that you're a charitable guy. Could you keep an eye on him? Because they probably know his history, that his parents were murdered. They don't know he's Batman, but you know they could think, well, maybe he can help him out, which makes sense, I guess." And then Dick Grayson's like, "I'm going to leave. Thanks for nothing." And he goes to leave.
He is a jerk from instant one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's not even like a segue to jerkdom. I'm just a jerk.
Yeah.
And there's also like a weird line where he says something like, "Hey, just leave me alone. You know, just tell people I stayed here for a while. I don't want Child Protective Services coming after me."
He's like 24. Think, like,
how old is this? Like, even 24. How old is this character supposed to be? I'm like, Child Protective Service. Like Chris O'Donnell had to be in his like mid-20s at least.
Yeah, 25, 26.
I mean, even his character looks like his. I mean, if you were to tell me his character is less than 17, I would be like,
I
would have questioned
it. I think at least 23.
Basically, they needed to cast a kid. Robin's supposed to be like 15, right?
Well, that's kind of...
I mean, it worked in the 60s show, but that's a different universe, right?
The comics actually did something funky, which is they started to realize that it was weird that Batman was hanging around with a 15-year-old kid. So they actually aged
him. Yeah, Dick Grayson Nightwing, is...
Yeah, he's one of the only characters in comics who's actually aged. And they bumped him up and were kind of like, let's age him up a little bit and make this less weird.
Less weird, yeah.
So
he convinces Robin to stick around, Dick Grayson to stick around.
Because Bruce Wayne shows him his rocket
motorcycle.
Bribes him
with a motorcycle.
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, if you stick around, fix money's up, you can keep one." So he's like, "Okay, I'll stick around."
And Alfred has some good food. By the way, this is almost like the Alfred movie. Alfred gets a lot of work in this movie. I mean, like the Michael, is it Gow?
I think it's
Michael Goff.
He must have been on the call sheet every day. Okay. I mean, it's pretty.
Which I didn't mind.
I didn't mind it.
No, he's a good actor, and he plays Alfred very well. And he's the highlight of the movie, and he's the only thing that, even though Commissioner Gordon's the same actor too, he's the only other thing that's really linking you to continuity. Like you keep forgetting that Batman Returns is the sequel to Batman Returns. Like you keep forgetting that until you see Alfred.
I also felt many times
even the mansion is different.
Like Alfred was the only character that the screenwriters and Joel Schumacher and the actor all kind of got. They got this character of what makes this character work. His kind of funky connection to Bruce Wayne, that he's not just Bruce Wayne's butler, but he's kind of like Batman's assistant. And like
he's a father figure, but he's also like his the guy who designs the suits and stuff. Like he's some kind of a secret genius.
Yeah. That character worked for me. Well, just about nothing else did.
Yeah.
I think something coming in right around here is the weirdest car chase. Could we say that maybe this is the strangest car chase?
I think they just kind of inserted an action sequence to pad the movie. I don't even think this is necessary.
It's the straight line car chase where
it's like the street goes on forever.
The street goes on forever, and Two-Face's cars are just chasing the Batmobile.
Is this one where he's dressed up like a? He's dressed up like an old lady, pushing a cart or something.
Yes, and he fires a rocket
without flipping a coin. Here's something I'm going to say: of all the things you could say about this movie, Two-Face rarely flips a coin, and Riddler rarely makes riddles.
Yeah,
well, and his riddles—he has like just a series of riddles that he gives Batman,
and the riddles make no sense.
And he must be like, "Oh, this is leading to something big." And what he finds out later, what it is like, well, that was a waste.
Yeah,
but so there's this car chase. Well, I think he sees the bat signal, he takes off in the car, or whatever, and immediately he just starts getting chased by the henchmen.
By the henchmen, and he ends up going down an alley.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, first, before that, I just want to say because you can tell how slow they're going because there's a shot of like him driving and the two cars behind him. And you can tell they're going slow, but you're like, oh, maybe you can't really tell. And then he like hits like a pothole and like some water sprays up, but it's like very slow. You can tell they're just kind of going like that. That's the moment where you can tell how slow they're going.
But it could have at least sped the footage up.
So they end up in like an alley with like a dead end.
He shoots a batarang to the top of the building at the end of the alley.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then he drives straight up the wall of the building.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Cut to next day.
Yeah.
What happened? I was driving up a building. How did that get resolved?
I was reading that there was supposed to be then a chase scene like on top of the buildings, but they didn't have like the money to shoot it, which is the scene they ended up doing in Batman and Robin.
Okay.
So that was leading to that, but
it's crazy.
Now it just becomes a clever getaway. And well, that's it.
I don't even know what's going on because you're thinking how
did he get that lumber's car off the top?
How did he get off the top of a building?
I just imagine like him getting up like 4 feet and then the car's just like dangling there, and then he's like, oh no, what am I gonna do now? And he's just kind of like hanging there in this bright star spangled car.
That's what I'm totally embarrassed. Like, imagine him just being like, I'm stuck.
Alfred, come and get me.
Triple A, I need a tow.
So crazy. I mean, when they just cut out of that, I was like,
I don't have my wallet.
That's nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that.
Can you take my back credit card and never leave the cave without?
Oh. We now get to meet.
The Riddler meets.
This is where they come in. Drew Barrymore and Debbie Mazar, Two-Face's henchwoman.
I liked this idea, but they don't do really much with it. Where Two-Face has got because he's got the duality, and of course this movie is literally making the duality. So he's got like the angelic girl on the one side, and he's got like the bad girl on the other side. And I thought that was kind of a cute idea. And they're serving him like meat. No, like the dark side of Two-Face gets like this like roast pig, and I think she says donkey meat.
Maybe.
Did she say donkey meat?
I did not.
And then the light side of him gets like champagne and oysters.
Yeah.
And he keeps referring to himself as we. And again, he's not flipping any coins or anything. He's just kind of like, we're Two-Face, so we're we, and we're going to eat champagne and donkey meat. Okay.
It's quail eggs. This is terrible. And Riddler comes in, and basically...
The costuming on Riddler was really good.
In this scene only.
Yes.
And it's sort of like the moment in Spider-Man 3 where... Who is it? Venom and the Green Goblin team up where...
There's no reason for them to team up,
and there's not really
because fundamentally they have different aims, different goals. The two characters from the comics history, they would not work together well. I can't imagine Riddler and Two-Face working together well.
Probably not. And they just sort of, it's just like, hey, we're working together now, and it's just like both characters are like, yeah. But you're like, okay, like they both hate, they have their hatred of Batman in common.
I guess that's
what it is. Well, I mean, obviously. Riddler's aim is he needs Two-Face's muscle to help to get money so he can to rob banks and stuff so he can build his super machine. And his promise to Two-Face is, and then I'll help you kill Batman because I can outsmart him.
Right.
But again, as Cody mentioned, Riddler's riddles really have nothing to do with the movie.
Or killing Batman. Yeah.
So
yeah.
But then all of a sudden, it becomes revealing Batman. So we reveal Batman's identity.
Which, by the way, when they can reveal Batman's identity, they do not reveal Batman's identity.
I thought the whole point of revealing his identity was so that he could find him and kill him.
I guess it's harder to kill him when he's armed.
That's what he tells Two-Face in this scene. He's like, okay, you want to kill Batman, I can find out who Batman is so we can go kill him. That's basically what his plan was.
And there's a very specific point later in this movie where the bad guys have won... and managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Which we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So they join up, and now they start essentially using Dick Grayson as a cutaway device in the movie.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
It's really
like Harrison doing laundry.
I really love this epic laundry montage.
Yeah, like Dick
like
Grayson.
Like there's this guitar going, and he's like freaking whipping his underwear around and like wringing it out, and there's like quick cuts. And
I have it in my notes as like karate laundry. Who would do laundry?
A very efficient
like
way of, and then he just made a mess because his water all over the
floor.
And then he's basically like, he like gives Alfred the thumbs up, and I'm thinking, yeah, no wonder they call you Dick because Alfred's got to mop all that up.
Yeah, I was like, why did you
dirty underwear?
I think everyone's just watching this being like, what advantage did anyone gain from that?
It's to show how cool Robin is.
He really becomes, in like sitcom writing terms, Dick Grayson becomes the B plot of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like not really that interesting, but is completely secondary to the other plot, so you can always cut back to it when you find yourself in an editing jam.
Yeah.
And they do that like 7 times where just they're like, they get stuck somewhere.
They must
somewhere.
Have just shot a bunch of scenes and, well, let's see them doing laundry and eating breakfast or just so they could use one
here
or there. Riding a motorcycle.
Hey, let's shoot a scene with him being like, hey, what's behind this door? Oh, nothing by that door. Cut. Okay. Then they go to some other scene. Then it's like him doing gymnastics to slide to into the bat cave.
Yep, yep, yep.
I love that too. So he's trying to figure out what's behind this door. It's like the one locked door.
Because, of course, it's the bat cave.
Right. So Alfred's like, oh, don't worry about that door. Don't go in the door. So he like devises this thing where he's like up three floors so that Alfred would feel comfortable going through the door because he knew where he was. And then as soon as Alfred opens the door, he like starts like gymnasticking down to slide in. But my favorite part is that he yells to himself, go, before he starts to do it. It's like, well, you're just giving yourself away there.
Again, the editing on that sequence couldn't have been worse.
Oh, yeah, you don't know.
Couldn't have been worse. Whoever was shooting this, the stunts on this, this did not get proper coverage or something on either of these. This is almost as bad as the bomb going out through the ceiling in terms of poor editing.
So he slides in, he finds a bat cave.
He finds a bat cave, yeah.
And then, so at this point, Bruce Wayne is, again, with Chase Meridian, and he's showing her the riddles, and they're trying to figure out the riddles or whatever. And
there's a bunch of psychobabble where Kilmer's like saying to Chase Meridian, like, we're all two people, which I'm like, yeah, that's where Two-Face and Batman stories can be interesting because they both have a weird duality to them.
Yes, it's the dark reflection of Batman. Yeah,
but which is not reflected in this movie at all.
But here's one moment that I always really like, though, is when Alfred calls him on his like Apple Watch.
Yes.
And then he's like, oh, you know, Dick took off one of the cars. And he's like, oh, the Beamer? He's like, no, the other car. And he's like, oh, the Jag? He's like, no, the other car.
Yeah.
Alfred is winning.
He sells that very well. Yeah, and that's a fun kind of moment in this movie.
Yeah, because Dick Grayson somehow stole the
Batmobile.
And he's driving around the neon streets of Gotham.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
He's trying to pick up chicks in the Batmobile.
Yeah. The makeup on this street gang. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
There are people in full skull Halloween makeup. What gang would do that? Who would take the time?
This is really gonna make me seem nerdy. I was so psyched about this movie when I was a kid.
Did you paint your face like that?
Yes, I did. I went to school and it didn't work. It didn't get me any chicks. No, I actually had read the novelization before the movie came out because I was so excited. And the novelization is obviously better than the movie, because in the novelization, I think the writer saw the flaws in the movie and then tried to write interesting scenes to make it better. And I believe, if I remember correctly, now I obviously only read it once, it's a movie book, so it's not exactly the best novel on the planet, but it was a good book, good read. And I...
this is just a book review now.
I seem to remember this gang being based on the Joker in the book. And that there were supposed to be like clowns who had like become obsessed with the Joker, and they were called like the Clown Gang or something like that, or they were called like the Jokers or something. And
that's not what they were in the movie.
That's not what they are in the movie. But if I may be mistaken, though, but I seem to remember that being a thing.
Maybe does it explain in the book why they seem to have a fascination with blacklight effects? Because no. Much of their costumes and makeup seems to be. Like, they're going to be like, hey, man, when we turn on these black lights, people are going to get really freaked out. And they're all carrying glow sticks.
Yeah, they are. To accentuate.
Oh, no.
Wasn't there a glowing gang in the skateboard, the drag race scene in Batman and Robin?
Yes.
Was there more of this? This is the blacklight gang.
Just, yep. This is a continuation.
Ripped this right off.
Except there's no Coolio this time.
Unfortunately.
And Dick Grayson shows off his fighting skills. Batman eventually has to come in and rescue him. Dick Grayson's like, I want to be your partner. And Batman's like, I work alone. Yeah. And there's a bunch of like, again, Val Kilmer's in a different movie where he's talking about, oh, you know, revenge will take you down this. Like, there's a very dark monologue about what being a hero will do to Dick Grayson. And
of course, Grayson's not having it. He's somewhat shoehorned in, obviously. This is happening because he's only in this one movie very, very rapidly. Like, Dick Grayson is forced on Bruce Wayne. He takes a little pity on him, lets him live with him. And in, like, what, a week, he knows Bruce Wayne's secret. And he's like, hey, man, I've got the athletic ability. I've got the drive. I've got the will. Let me be your partner. Let's team up. And that's like if I met some random person on the street and said, hey, I like your job. Can I work with you? Like, that's really, there's no organic growth there between these two characters.
No.
At all. It's just like, we got to get Robin in so we can sell the toy.
Right. Yeah. Which is,
I did have the Robin toy when I was a kid, by the way.
I bet. Well, yeah. I think
I had a Two-Face too, but.
Oh, did you have a Riddler? I remember some.
I might have had a Riddler. Yeah.
There was some good Riddler stuff.
I had Batman the Animated Series figures, but I didn't have any in the movie ones.
I preferred the animated series look, frankly, I prefer the animated series to these. I mean, the animated series had more character development going on.
The animated movie they released the year after this, Mask of the Phantasm, was like 10 times better.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, so much better.
So so Dick Grayson's like, I want to be your partner. He's like, no.
Yeah,
and he's like, you can't stop me from being your partner. I'm going to be there wherever you go. Blah blah. So then they go to...
This is like Edward Nygma's launch party, something for his 3D...
Well, yeah, because he's not in his Riddler garb. Right. So he's clearly like has his public persona as like a challenger to Bruce Wayne. Well, I've invented this new thing that's going to make me a millionaire kind of thing.
I never understood his hair in this movie because as the Riddler, he's got like this short crop, like orange hair. And then when he's Edward Nygma, he's got like longer, like, you know, normal hair.
But
is that... like a piece, or is
it? I didn't.
Well, one is left to assume that he's wearing a wig as Edward Nygma, but if that's a wig, that's not a good one. And was he wearing a wig before he was the Riddler, like in the first scene with Edward Nygma?
I don't understand.
That's one thing as a kid that bothered me as a kid, too. I was like, wait a minute, his hair was just short and orange.
Yeah, that really bothered me. Well, like.
But I do like that in this scene, like he's dressed exactly like. Bruce Wayne, like his hair is actually Bruce Wayne's hair, and he's got Bruce Wayne's. Every time Bruce Wayne takes his glasses off, he takes his off because he's like emulating him.
It's like a little funny scene. Yeah. He's
obsessed with Bruce Wayne. Yeah. So Bruce Wayne's at this party, brings Chase, and he's, you know, Edward Nygma's like somehow he's like richer than Bruce Wayne now and more powerful than Bruce Wayne.
The gossip columnist is like Nygma Tech stock is outselling Wayne stock.
When did this happen? This has only been like a week.
I know, in like a
and
week.
And he robbed a bunch of jewelry stores to get the capital. I mean,
yeah, I was like, I don't think this movie understands how the stock market works. I don't know.
They're all like Bruce Wayne's old news, and Edward Nygma's the new guy, and. It's a whole weird thing there.
Yeah.
And then he somehow tricks, because he's got the box set up.
Yeah.
And the box is now not just like a 3D thing. It's like you go in there and it's like shows you your fantasy world or whatever.
It's like virtual reality, yeah.
To give an example, by the way, for what this would be like if we were literally like, is Oculus Rift going to purchase Apple? Yeah. You know what I mean? Which you'd be like, no. Like, what? That's not how that works. You know, yeah.
So,
No.
Yeah. So he somehow tricks Bruce Wayne into going into the machine and... he's like getting information for because he can read people's minds.
Oh yeah, because Bruce Wayne says to Drew Barrymore, "Hey, is this thing off?" And Drew Barrymore's like, "Yeah, I'll take out the power source." And Bruce Wayne's like, "Oh, okay. Well, Drew Barrymore seems trustworthy." So he goes in, and then Drew Barrymore's like, "I'm just going to put it in the power source again." And
it's not even a power source; it's like a memory like tube that
stores it's like a glow stick.
Stores their like information from their brain.
And he goes in, and he's getting his brain read. When Two-Face crashes the party, which is so dumb that even Edward Nygma's like, why is my partner crashing this party? What is going on? Like, even he's like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Do we even know why Two-Face crashed this party?
He's just like, I'm getting impatient. I want to attract Batman to the party. Because he's like, what are you doing?
We're wasting time.
Okay. There's nothing like a hold up that, you know, nothing else is going to bring Batman like a hold up. So.
Batman loves when supervillains crash fancy parties. We know one thing about Batman.
Yeah, so true. Batman like sneaks out the back and where Alfred's parked out back and apparently has a bat suit in the car.
Yeah.
He puts it on in the car, which I want to see that scene, like him trying to get it on in the back of the car.
Yeah.
So then he crashes through the ceiling.
Yeah.
And starts beating up bad guys.
Yep.
And we just get like, this is very Batman and Robin, like these kind of generic soundstagey fight scenes of just like generic stuntmen getting beat up.
Right.
And like, this is actually sort of like if you play the Batman Arkham games.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like that where you're just like, they're just cannon fodder, like, you know, for him to just punch these people.
Yeah.
But they somehow trick Batman into getting into a tube that's like a giant slide.
Yeah, I can't remember how they do that. Like, somehow they escape through something and then he, like, jumps into a tube, but they have trapped him.
They've trapped him. They now have Batman trapped.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they, instead of just killing him, this is like, we get very James Bondy here. Yeah. And they fill a room with explosive gas.
Yeah, and then fire a rocket into it.
And fire a rocket into it.
Yes.
Which Batman just pulls his cape over him.
Of course.
And he's totally fine.
The cape, like, he, like, hits a button and the cape goes, like, chrome or something. Like it was fireproof.
Yeah, like this cape is more magic than like when Superman rips the S off his chest in Superman 2 and it turns into a blanket, you know? Like, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so he survives. And is this where he ends up making out with Nicole Kidman at the end of this scene? Or soon?
Well, no, because Robin saves him.
Yes,
he ends up making out with Robin.
No. Okay.
No, Robin, rubber lips resist your charms.
Robin, like Dick Grayson, like also went to the car and he's like, "Ah, oh, there's an emergency." Alfred, and Alfred pulls out his gymnastics outfit from the trunk and he puts that on and saves, because Batman's buried under like a pile of rubble.
Yeah.
So he pulls him out of the rubble. And then it cuts to them in the Batcave where he's like, "You had no right to be there." Blah, blah.
Even though
he
saved his life.
He's like, "I saved you. I'm in this now. I'm Robin. I'm going to be with you." And he's like, "No." And he's like, "You can't do anything about it."
Yeah.
Basically,
I'm here to help. Yeah.
Tension, friction between the two characters.
We then learn that it's Halloween night, I think. Or somewhere in here, Batman does make out with Nicole Kidman in like another.
Because he has to. He has to do it at some point.
At some point around here, that's right. He calls. Or he sees Nicole Kidman at the party. Okay, so it is at the party before he gets trapped. And she's like, "Oh, come to my place at midnight tonight." And so he's like, yeah. So after they go back and he fights with Robin about this, then he's like, he's talking to Alfred about it. And he's like, "Well, I don't want her to love Batman. I want her to love me." And Alfred's like, "Well, you should let her decide that." And so he's like, "Okay." So he just met Batman again and goes to her apartment. This scene is like,
"Do you love Batman or do you love Bruce Wayne?"
Basically, this
write,
scene,
write your answer in a piece of paper.
This scene like feels like it's out of a different movie, like a dream or something, because he like comes to her balcony and she's like laying all draped in sheets and
of course
and then all she sexy. Comes and she kisses, you know, makes out with him, and she's like, "Oh, wait a minute, I'm in love with another guy, sorry." And he's like, "Oh, I understand." He walks away and he smiles like, "Oh, she likes me."
Turns out it's Commissioner Gordon that she likes.
Now that would that's a movie.
So
now it's pretty soon it's Halloween night, in which we learn that kids can actually trick or treat at the door of Wayne Mansion. Yeah, I didn't understand
that, because there's a giant gate that's closed, but
yeah, I don't. The movie has both established that Wayne Manor is so removed from society that there's this huge gate and all this security system, and the kids can walk up to the door and trick or treat. That both of these things are true.
And just slightly left of frame, there's just a little suburban community that's just right next to
it. I guess.
It just sprung up. He sold out to Barden Homes, you know, and he built a bunch of houses there. Yeah.
So Batman's shutting down the Batcave, too. He's like, "I'm done as Batman." For some reason, in the middle of this, sudden, there's two supervillains, like, destroying the city. He's like, "I'm done as Batman."
Just on other things.
Yeah. So he's deciding to give up. Yeah.
He's shutting out the Batcave, and Robin's trying to convince him to not to. And he's like, I'm just done. I'm going to tell Chase who I am tonight. She's coming over. And
yeah, but he's already told Vicki Vale. He's already told Selina Kyle. Yeah. But this time, another secret.
This time he's giving it up, though. He's like, "I'm telling her my secret, and I'm giving it up. I'm just going to be happy with her," or whatever.
Right.
So then, yeah, so Chase comes over.
This is a precursor to The Dark Knight Rises.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
So Chase comes over, you know, as these trick-or-treaters are coming to the door and everything, and they start talking about it. He's like trying to tell her the secret, like, "Oh, I have something to tell you." She's like, "You can tell me anything." Then he starts telling her, and she just, like, kisses him in the middle of him, actually, like, opening up to her. He's like, she just kisses him.
Yeah,
she's just horny. She wants it.
At which point she figures out that he's Batman because he kisses like Batman.
Yes, that's right. Yes. That's right. She figures that out, and then Two-Face and the Riddler get into Wayne Manor
by
trick or treating.
Yes,
a real low point in this series.
It is.
And
it worked, didn't it?
And then they go on a rampage, including, you know. At least they did blow up that stupid Batmobile, but you know they.
That only means they're gonna build the next one.
Yeah.
And well, they like trashed the Batcave. Oh, these guys have won.
Yeah.
They have hit Batman in his home turf.
That they figure out who Batman is through the box. Oh,
because they got the thing.
They were able to read Bruce Wayne's brain. They figured it out. But
they
here's
have,
something that
oh,
I
go ahead.
This yeah. something I don't like in this whole scene, right? Again, these villains out of character. Again, Riddler is not really using his riddles the right way, and Two-Face isn't flipping a coin. Two-Face keeps flipping the coin again and again and again until he gets the outcome he wants.
Right.
In this scene, there's a little joke.
No, I read that. I was reading somewhere that it's actually him flipping it for the three people, for Alfred, because he flips it three times, once for Alfred, once for Chase, and then once for Bruce.
Oh, I thought he was flipping
which I always thought when I was a kid too, but then they explained, no, he's actually flipping it once for each of these guys. Okay.
Well, at one point though, Two-Face shoots his gun.
He shoots it at, he flips it, gets to the kill side, and he shoots his gun at Bruce Wayne's head.
They knock out. Bruce Wayne is unconscious.
Yes. Yeah.
Two-Face is standing over Bruce Wayne with a gun.
Yes. Yeah.
And Death the Riddler comes in and is like, no, don't kill him. They literally just leave. They have everything they want.
Yes.
They know Bruce Wayne's Batman. They have Batman. They could kidnap Batman. They could take Batman with them.
Yes.
They could kill Batman. There is a menu of opportunities for these two. Instead, inexplicably, they just decide to leave Batman alive.
He wants to leave him one last riddle.
But it doesn't. But they have.
That's what he says. He's like, don't kill him. He won't learn anything. And he leaves him a riddle. So they take off with Chase.
Yep.
Yeah.
Batman wakes up and he's discussing the riddles with Alfred.
And then, by the way, it's somehow a surprise to Alfred and Bruce Wayne. So they're like, Edward Nygma's
the Riddler. That's what I was going to say, is the riddles basically say, the riddles all together, the answer is Mr. E. And he's like, Mr. E, Enigma, Edward Nygma. And he's like, wait a minute, that guy didn't commit suicide, he changed the tapes. And he's the Riddler. It's like, I literally said out loud, like, wait, he just figured all this. The greatest detective in the world just figured out
that. I don't even think this is a surprise at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and why would it be a surprise?
Right.
Why wouldn't it be? The guy's name is Enigma, for God's sake. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now,
isn't that in the comics, just a sidebar, isn't that in the comics just like a fake name he uses when he's trying to like not be the Riddler? Like Joker, when Joker's trying to...
My name
is Edward Nygma, kind of like when he's in disguise as not the Riddler.
I think they've gone a couple of different ways in different incantations there. I think sometimes it is just like a fake name, but I think now when they check him into Arkham, he goes in as Edward Nygma.
Oh, okay.
But... yeah, they've kind of danced around that a little bit too. Okay. So now Batman is in Dick Grayson meet and he's like, all right, you can work with me. And Dick Grayson's like, I can't promise I won't kill Two-Face. And Batman's like, well, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Everything he was trying to teach him the whole movie.
How is Batman okay with that? Like, I wanted Batman to be like, you know what, I'm gonna draw the line there.
But I think that's more in line.
You know what, that Two-Face is a dick, so I'll let you this but one that, time.
That's more in line with the first two movies, though. He kills everybody in the first two movies. The Joker.
That's true. True.
He just kills everybody. So I don't understand, like, his whole morality thing in this movie. He's like, you keep killing people.
Well, you could I guess, though now, of course, I'm giving this film too much credit. You could say that Bruce Wayne is evolving and he's starting to realize that killing people doesn't solve anything. So, like, in his earlier years, he's still got resentment.
Then he just doubled back and I said, yeah, I'll kill him if you want. And then he kills him.
He's basically I guess. So
but
he gets in the bat plane.
Yes.
Dick Grayson gets in the bat boat.
Yes, in his brand new Robin
costume. In his brand new Robin costume that Alfred, I guess, made for him.
That Alfred made.
Yes.
And they start heading. Batman gives, it's not the best thumbs up we've ever seen in a movie, but it's one of the better thumbs up. When from a moving plane, Batman gives Commissioner Gordon a thumbs up. If Commissioner Gordon saw that, his eyesight is superhero level.
It is. He's got superhero sight.
I wish Commissioner Gordon did the fist pump.
Yes. And we get a really just a kind of a goofy sequence of like, how they get to the Riddler's hideout in it, like Batman's and the Riddler and Two-Face are playing like a real life game of Battleship.
They are.
They have like mines set up in the water and missiles and stuff.
This felt very 60s TV show again. Yeah. I mean, like the extremes of this movie, like there's scenes that are very dark and very personal. And then like this scene, which is totally ridiculous and 60s. But both the bat boat and the bat plane end up getting blown up. Yes. And it literally, moments after they were introduced, it's just both characters literally swimming to this island in their costumes.
Holy rusted metal, Batman.
Yeah. And we get, it's kind of a joke, you know, the
literally, we're standing on holy rusty metal.
Yeah.
And that was just don't say it or have him say, holy crap or something.
You know what it was? The joke, this came too late in the movie. Mm-hmm. I feel like this joke may have actually worked earlier in the film, but to work this joke into your climax totally, like, stops the movie in its tracks.
Yeah. So they get separated. I think Batman gets into the island, into the lair, and he's like working his way up. At the same time, Two-Face pops out and is like fighting Robin outside on the rocks.
Yeah.
So Robin like knocks him over the edge. Two-Face is hanging off the ledge.
Yes.
And he's like, Two-Face is basically like saying, yeah, I'm dead now, see you in hell or whatever. And
yeah.
And Robin's like, no, I'd rather see you in jail. And he saves him. After all this stuff, like, I'm going to kill him. And he saves him.
Because he learned a lesson.
And of course, Two-Face pulls a gun on him. He's like, oh, you're an idiot.
Yeah. And Robin's like, I kind of am.
you got me dead to rights.
Yeah. I just learned another lesson.
Yeah.
So Batman makes his way up to the Riddler's chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's got this big throne and his crazy pink outfit.
And there's all of this kind of like shenanigans. And they pull out what is sort of like a classic Batman trope of Robin and Dr. Chase Meridian are in tubes. Mm-hmm. And he has to choose which one he's going to save. Yep. Yeah. And they're, you know,
which would have worked if this was a Two-Face gag because, you know, it's choose with the flip of the coin as opposed to Riddler.
Yeah.
It's like they picked the wrong villain to be the lead villain.
Yeah, well, and this is, and like, you know, they sort of turn on because Batman's like, it's a trap, I can't save either one. So what does Batman do? He just takes a Batarang out of his, like, pocket and whips a Batarang at what looks like a giant glass tank of brainwaves.
Yes.
And the whole scheme unfloats. Yes. Like, Riddler was... apparently not ready for Batman to throw. This would be like
if we throw a rock.
If we were in a china shop and someone was like, "We're fine as long as no china gets broken." The most breakable thing in his lair, Batman breaks it. That's it. Everything unravels.
Yeah.
Yep. Game over.
Yeah. And that's so
it. The Riddler's like brain is being melted by the stuff coming out of it, and he hits the button, which releases the two tubes.
So the two tubes and Batman. Defies gravity and somehow.
Well, this is the scene that's in Batman and Robin 2 when the two scientists like fall off the thing, right?
Yeah,
and then he like has to jump off and save them both.
And saves them both.
Grapples and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he jumps down through. They're like falling to their deaths, like at the bottom of this big tube.
Yeah.
And he saves them both, and then.
And they save them. And then they find out Two-Face is still alive, and he's got a gun. Somehow,
how did he get down there? He's like standing on a beam.
I don't know. Yeah, he's all of a sudden Two-Face is just there.
Yeah,
I mean, he flipped a coin, and that decided that he was going to land on the beam.
Right there where they are, and he's like, "I'm going to kill you." And then, incredibly, Batman was carrying a ton of fake coins.
He's got a coin purse on the back of his...
He's the richest man in Gotham. He's got money on him.
I would have loved if, like...
like 20 coins in the air.
I would have loved...
the like, one time where he actually decides to flip a coin.
I would have loved as he's, like, doing everything before that, though, if he just heard, like, coins jingling. as he's, like, running. Ching, ching, ching.
Yeah. I mean, and they were right at the ready. He didn't even have to search for them. Like, he was ready for this moment and throws, like, 20 coins in the air. Two-Face gets confused. And falls into the water on his own, I think. Yes. And
he just goes, I think he reaches out for his coin.
Yeah, he
causes him to stumble and fall.
He flips his coin. Batman throws the coins. He's like, no, my coin. And then he like, he falls off the beam and into the water.
And into water.
Which I love, too, because earlier in the movie, someone said to Batman, I think it was Robin, he's like, did you notice that coin that Two-Face has? That's his like Achilles heel. And Batman's like, yeah, thanks, I know.
Yeah. And by the way, never comes up again.
Except, well, I think that's what this was.
It was just the most basic of like setup. Riddler gets taken to Arkham.
And he claims that he's Batman.
He claims he's Batman, so that he's, you know.
Because he's nuts and he forgot or whatever.
Yes. Which, by the way, I feel bad that I keep going back to comic books, but in the comic books about 15 years ago, Riddler did figure out that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and Batman confronts Riddler with saying, well, you're not going to tell anybody, and Riddler's like, how do you know? And Batman's like, you would hate the fact that everyone knows the answer to the greatest riddle in Gotham, and Riddler gets really upset because he's like, he's right, like, I can't tell anybody, you know, and it's actually kind of a cool moment in the comics again, completely nullified in this goofy moment with Jim Carrey.
Well, if Jim Carrey's Riddler was actually into riddles, then they could have done that. But
they would have, And it ends with Batman and Robin. Like, I felt like they did not have an ending for the movie. So yeah, it ends with just Batman and Robin running at the camera, which they then recycle for Batman and Robin and Batgirl running at the camera.
I mean, it's a cool shot, but I mean, it's more like a publicity thing, like a trailer shot than a really...
Yeah.
They probably shot for the trailer, like, just start at the end because we don't have anything to...
Yeah. I literally felt like that. I felt like they were don't have an ending.
Here's one for you. Never put Dick Grayson in the modern Robin suit until the end of the movie. And the end of the movie is some bank robber with some generic villains, and then the door busts open, and there you have Batman and Robin in full costume, and then they swing into action, and the cape is the white to black, and then you get the end credits. That would have made more sense. Triumphant music, now it's Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree. This movie's terrible. Terrible, terrible. Cody, I know you have some nostalgic love.
It's worse than I remembered it being. And when I saw it the first time, I was totally into it. It's like, oh my God, that scene was so awesome. And oh my God, that set was amazing. And oh my God, the Riddler. Yeah, Jim Carrey's so cool.
I mean, when I was a kid, like I said, I had the Batman and Robin toys and the Riddler and Two-Face and, you know, action figures and the car and everything. And we had like a card game we played all the time. It was like, it had like this cardboard coin you would flip, and it was just like fun.
Well, you had like a bullseye on you.
I had the Nintendo game, and
you were the perfect age for this movie. Yeah.
So for me, it was like I grew up watching it, and I watched it literally, I mean, 20, 30 times probably in my life. And I've been watching it a few years, and I watched it again this weekend for the first time in a while, and it's still just like, I still got that. Because I was afraid to watch now. Like, if I watch it now, I'm probably going to really hate it like Batman and Robin. But I watch it again. It's like, it's goofy and it's not Batman Returns, but it's...
Well, Leslie, let's do this Is It So Bad It's Good before we move into So Wrong It's Right. And I'm going to go first. For me, it's not so bad it's good. But I think for people who don't have a strong attachment to the Batman character, I think this would be so bad it's good. In that it's very goofy, sometimes intentionally goofy.
Yeah.
And the parts, like, I think people would, I can actually see why people would watch this movie. I mean, for me, it's like nails on a chalkboard as a Batman fan, but I think it would be so bad it's good for other people.
Well, I don't think it's so bad it's good. I think if you watch it from the right angle, then you kind of get it, and it kind of is enjoyable. If you're not watching it from, like, you know, this is a sequel to Batman Returns, and this is...
Right.
It's, you know, what led to Batman and Robin, and this is colorful. You know, it's not the same thing. But if you watch it as, like, this is something different, this is more like a comic book or the 60s show, then it's more enjoyable to me, I think.
Yeah.
So I that's why I enjoy it.
I could see that.
I don't think it's so bad it's good, because there's not enough to laugh at. There's enough good scenes. There's enough salvageable materials, enough good concepts where this could have been a much better movie, maybe helmed by a different director. I don't know. Because of that, I think it's just kind of a fail. I think it's just kind of like a dumb Batman movie that has potential. Obviously, again, like Cody, I did enjoy it very much when I saw it when I was young, and then saw it again and was like, ooh. But with Batman and Robin, like, I'll pop that sucker in and laugh at it any day of the week. So I don't think this is so bad it's good.
Okay. All right. I can see that. I have a couple of So Wrong It's Right topics. The first one I want to notice is... did anyone notice a somewhat famous film director who has a small part in this movie? Did anybody see this? I'll give the answer to this one. John Favreau is credited as being the role he's credited as is assistant. I think he's an assistant to a mob boss in this.
Is he in the scarification scene?
I think that's the scene they're referring to.
Huh.
Johnny Favreau's credited in this. And we may have even asked this question before on the show, but does anyone know who the original actor who was cast as Robin was and was paid for this, even though he wasn't in the movie?
I do know, because I've researched this. It's Marlon Wayans.
Marlon Wayans. He was paid when Tim Burton was attached.
Yeah.
They signed Marlon Wayans, and it was a pay or play contract, which meant even when they recast the role, Marlon Wayans still got paid.
Which means that two black actors were recast as white actors in this movie.
As white
characters, but still Billy Dee and Marlon Wayans.
It really does.
This is a very white movie, by the way.
Oh, God,
it is.
Yeah. The mayor is
a black guy, and like that's it.
Yeah.
And he's got like two lines. Like, this really did kind of like. Billy Dee Williams doesn't do too much in Batman Returns, but he's in Batman 89 Nuff,
right,
where he is built up to the point where you could open Batman Forever with the scene where Billy Dee Williams gets scarred.
Yeah.
And then he could be your villain for that movie, and it would have been so cool.
Yeah.
But I think they just played it safe, figured Tommy Lee Jones is a bigger name, a more bankable star.
Yeah.
And let's just get him in there instead, and we'll just... this is almost like a reboot. Like, if they had waited, like, 3 more years and then just made this movie in 97 or 98, I think I would buy it a little better because I would have considered it like a reboot of Batman. Recast Commissioner Gordon and Alfred, and now you have a new series that's beginning. Here's an interesting one. I heard an interesting fan theory the other day that tries to salvage these movies. The theory is that the world of Tim Burton's two Batman movies is so grim and so dark that Batman and Robin and Batman Forever, the Schumacher Batman movies, are Batman movies created by the citizens of Gotham from the... Almost like this is what Tim Burton's Gotham citizens would make a movie about Batman, because they're celebrating Batman and they're bright and colorful because their world is so bleak. So these are like movies within movies, and those bleak characters would,
I was also reading this week, or a couple weeks ago, I can't remember exactly what it was, but something about, you know, there's like a shot they keep showing of like a bat flying at the camera. That's like a puppet, and there's supposed to be, that's like a giant puppet. And
there's supposed to be a weird dream sequence.
Well, there's supposed to be a dream sequence where Batman like fights the bat.
Oh.
Like he fights like a giant bat puppet.
Yeah.
And I guess that was just so ridiculous that they didn't.
But there's that one shot. Isn't there one shot where he's like communing with the giant bat?
No.
Like, or was that just in the trailer?
It might have been from
I remember. I specifically remember a shot of Val Kilmer like facing off against the giant bat, but not fighting him. Kind of like looking at him.
I think that's what this was
from. I think they probably also would have been afraid that comics fans would have gone crazy thinking that that was
Man-Bat.
Yeah. Dr. Kirk Langstrom.
Who, yep.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so here's here is our real so wrong it's right question. And if Nick was here, I know Nick would have gotten this. So you guys are going to take... How many right now in the current DC Comics universe and in the current timeline, how many current and former Robins are fighting crime in the current DC Comics timeline? Current and former Robins are active and fighting crime in the right now DC Comics timeline.
I know how. I think I know how many Robins there were, and I think I'm going to take a stab.
I am going to give a little explanation so the comics nerds don't totally freak out. We are not counting Stephanie Brown from the Dark Knight, Frank Miller's Dark Knight series, which happens in the future.
So we're talking about New 52.
In the New 52. In the New 52. How many current and former Robins are running around fighting crime?
I'm going to say. Because they rebooted, though. I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to say 3 because they rebooted. So I'm going to assume Jason Todd is still with us.
I was going to say 4.
Wow. This is going to blow you away. The answer is 5.
5?
There are 5.
Were there even ever 5 Robins?
Well, this is who it would be. Dick Grayson, mm-hmm. who is now Nightwing.
Yep.
Who mm-hmm. briefly in comics was turned into a secret agent, but who now seems to, because comics, but who now seems to be back to the Nightwing role. Jason Todd, yep. who is the second Robin who was dead.
Was killed.
Long yep. dead, but now yep. is back as Red Hood and is in the comics as that.
Okay.
Tim Drake,
yep.
who was Tim the Drake. Third Robin.
He was the one I was assuming was Robin when I said 3.
He is Tim Drake still, is Robin. He is still Robin, but is now known as Red Robin.
Okay.
Damian Wayne, who is Bruce Wayne's son, is another.
I thought that was a future.
That's in the New 52. Damian Wayne.
Future Robin.
Is in the.
So he's
is
current.
Robin.
So he's concurrent. Okay.
Well, and they've just recently introduced a fifth character, Duke Johnson, who appears to be also self-appointing himself as Robin in the latest timeline. So there are right now 5 current and former Robins running around the DC Cinematic Universe to the point where this has actually gotten so unwieldy in a recent title, not in Batman, but in a Batman Eternal title, Batman is a quirky line where he goes, this is a job for Batman and Robin. And one of them goes, which one? And Batman goes, all of them. And four Robins are lined up behind Batman. It's gotten like
ridiculous.
As much as I love comic books can be ridiculous. And this is a very ridiculous thing. Yeah, there are too many Robins running around.
I read an article this week too, just quickly, that made the case for the soundtrack to Batman Forever being like the greatest soundtrack of the 90s.
What?
It's pretty good.
Oh, the music, not the score.
Not the score.
Yeah.
But everyone says like Pulp Fiction or, but like this had, yeah, that song was like huge. It goes from like that song to like the Flaming Lips, which is like, you know, a more
they were big
band
at that time.
Well, Bono and the Edge did a song.
Yeah, so there's like a very, it's like soundtrack. Eclectic, and there's like a lot of bigger songs on it. So
this is a pretty cool, I mean, for the mid 90s, this is a surprising, it's funny because none of the music actually shows up in the movie.
Well, a couple of them, yeah, like the,
well, I guess
Kiss From
snippets.
Rose, like half of Kiss From Rose is at the end of the credits.
The
U2, I think one was during the credits.
The
Flaming Lips song, like they played like a verse of it during the Riddler scene.
I actually do remember the soundtrack was big. That was a thing. That was a big thing in the 90s that I remember, is music from and inspired by XYZ movie. And it always had a bunch of big name acts, and the Jesus and Mary Chain would be on all of these albums. And they were always really huge. And then that was like a marketing. Obviously, it's marketing. They still do it. But you know, I remember that being serious. Like there was the Crow soundtrack, and there was the Spawn soundtrack, and there was the soundtrack to Batman Forever. And every movie had a soundtrack connected to it. That was just popular music. Most of it was not in the movie, shamelessly thrown on as quote unquote inspired by to get you to,
because they could also
sell the bands. And these were good soundtracks. I'm not knocking the music. Yeah. It's just, it seemed to be that was part of the movie formula. There was the movie, there was the toys, there was the merchandising, and of course, there was the quote unquote from and inspired by soundtrack that you would buy.
Because you could also do a music video, because there's music videos for both Seal's Kiss From a Rose and Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me from Bono and the Edge.
Yep.
They would incorporate clips from the movie, and this is back when MTV was actually playing videos, and this where they would turn these into, it was very, it was marketing. It was. So I've told the story before, but it's my favorite story from when I worked at Blockbuster Video back in the day, and it involves this movie. So Blockbuster Video had some kind of weird deal with Warner Brothers where we were flooded with copies of Batman Forever. I mean, we had at my small suburban store just tons of Batman Forever tapes. And the movie wasn't even that old when Blockbuster clearly started to realize, like, whoa, we got too many. So what we would do is we would sell VHS tapes as previously viewed. Mm-hmm. This was a big thing at Blockbusters in the 90s. So while Batman Forever was still on the new release shelf, I don't think this ever happened with any other movie, we were also selling them as previously viewed. And it cost, I believe, and when I told this story the last time on the podcast, I got the numbers right. I'm going to say it was, I think, $368 with tax to rent a movie. Or like $378, or, you know, and we were then selling previously viewed tapes for $299, which I believe we in Massachusetts we could sell without tax. So whenever anyone came up to rent Batman Forever, we were instructed, hey, see if you can just sell them a previously viewed copy. And I will never forget this. A guy came up with the tape, and we, you know, he's Batman Forever, and we said, hey, if you want to, you can actually buy this copy for $2.99. You don't have to return it. It's actually going to be about 68 cents less for you to own it. And the guy looked at it. He thought about it for a little bit and said, "No, I'm going to rent it. I don't want this to stay in my house." A guy paid us 68 cents
to return
to not have to have it stay in his house
and risked late fees.
I think that says a lot about how this guy's feeling on this movie. He so badly didn't want to keep it in his home.
I still have my VHS copy around somewhere.
It was a great cover. It was a great cover. So I think that one brings this one to a close. We've got, we're actually, right after we get off the air, we're going to talk about some fun movies we have coming up, I think, to do.
Sure.
We'll have more special guests coming in.
We will.
And lots more fun coming up. And yeah, is there anything you guys wanna throw in there? All right. No. As always, no. As always, find the Facebook page. I love looking at the pictures. This one should have some interesting pictures.
Oh, yeah, this is
a very
much.
Visual movie.
It is.
All right, that wraps it up. We will see you back here next time. Bye.
See ya.
Okay, drive safe.